This is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors, exclusively on the Bun 2.0, KBUN FM 104.5.
Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors is sponsored by Bonded Lock and Key and DS Beverages. Well, we're checking in with Steve Ballou. He has, for many years, headed up the Cystic Fibrosis Walleye Classic, which is coming up just over a week from now. It'll be Friday and Saturday, October 4th and 5th, the banquet Friday night, and the event will be Saturday. And how many years is this now, Steve?
This is our 18th year.
Wow.
Unbelievable. When I started printing these posters up again and I seen that it was the 18th year, it's just hard to believe that it's been that long that we've been putting this on.
And you've run this on the Cass Lake chain every single year, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we've always just been on Cass Lake, and of all the 17 years prior to this one, and same this year, we're just on Cass Lake.
So you need to stay on Cass Lake proper.
Correct, yeah. Even though we're connected to the other chain of lakes like Pike Bay and Andrusia, fishing is only allowed on Cass Lake.
Okay. The Cystic Fibrosis Walleye Classic, as we say, has been around a long time, and it's always been that first weekend in October, so kind of the last tournament of the year. There seems to be getting a few more fall tournaments, but this one still holds out as the latest one that I can think of.
Yeah, we've always done it the first Saturday in October, and we haven't altered from that one, and it seems to work out well for everybody. It's kind of the last hurrah for the year. A lot of the guys after this tournament put the boats away and go hunting.
Yeah, well, it is definitely that time of year for that as well. $300 per team. There's a 70-team max, and I'm assuming we can still sign up at this point.
Yeah, you can either give me a call, or you can go on the website at the Cystic Fibrosis Walleye Classic.com, and you can register that way too.
Okay. Well, for years you had it at your resort, but obviously you're out of the resort business now, so you've made a move as to where we headquarter that tournament.
Yeah, we actually moved over to Stony Point Resort. Jim over at the resort has fished my tournament. I believe he has done it at least 16 years. He missed 1 year because of health issues. But he very supportive of us, wanted to keep this tournament going, and he offered his resort over there, and it worked out excellent. We were there last year, and that's where we'll be at again this year.
Okay. The Cystic Fibrosis Walleye Classic obviously is a fundraiser to battle cystic fibrosis. And, Steve, we always ask you this, but there's always new people who don't know the story. Why do you put this tournament on, and why is CF important to you?
I lost a son at 17 years old to cystic fibrosis. I have a daughter that is 32 years old now that has cystic fibrosis. So it's kind of a disease that's more like most common people would know that it's like pneumonia. So it's a constant fight with the lungs to keep them clear and the medicines and the treatments that you need to do every day to keep those lungs as healthy as you can. But it is a progressive disease, and basically a lot of them, once they get into their 30s and 40s, alts for a double lung transplant, if that's what they choose to do, and that's kind of what direction that they go. Some cases are more severe than others. My daughter is lucky enough, and it's because of these fundraisers that we do and everybody else does. There's research being done continually to try to find a cure, and they're getting closer and closer. But along with that, they come up with new medications and new treatments for these people with cystic fibrosis. And that's what basically has helped her in the last 5 years, is there's always some new medication or new treatment coming out that has kept her fairly healthy.
Yeah, she continues to be very active, and I know she's often at the tournament as well.
Yep, she'll be up again this year. I talked to her, in fact, this morning, and her husband will be up to the banquet, and they hang around during the tournament, and it seems like it's become kind of a family thing. With a lot of the teams have fished this tournament year after year, and they've gotten to know my daughter and the family and the cystic fibrosis and what it is, and so it's become kind of a large family now that does the tournament.
All right. And we'll get into the details of the tournament in a little while, but let's talk a little bit more about cystic fibrosis. You said it was like pneumonia. It's a lung issue. And it's just a situation where, at this point, it just doesn't get better. There are, as you noted, some things and some therapies that that can make it tolerable, but it just doesn't go away.
No, and it affects more than just the lungs. I mean, the lungs is the major part of it, but it also affects the digestive system, the sinuses. Most patients with cystic fibrosis are very small framed, very thin build. It's hard for them to digest the food. They take medications when every time they eat to help digest, to help them try to gain weight. She does treatments 3 times a day, and each treatment will take her about a half hour to 45 minutes. She has a vest that she puts on, and the vest actually physically shakes her to try and break the mucus loose in the lungs, and all CF patients are that way. They have to do some type of physical therapy to break up that mucus, along with inhaled antibiotics and inhaled nebulizers to try and break up that mucus and any bacteria that's in the lungs.
Yeah, and when it comes to autoimmune diseases, the cost is really astronomical and a big factor as well. So all the things you can do for these things is really important.
Absolutely. You know, that was the big thing that we do these fundraisers, is to try and forward that research and try to help these patients out, financially also, to get rid of some of these huge astronomical medical bills and these medicines that these kids take and the equipment that they use. But just, you know, any way to help out, and that's why we continue with the tournament every year, just to forward that.
Now, when someone is, and I presume they're born with cystic fibrosis, correct?
Yes, and some are diagnosed right away. Others are not diagnosed for years. It all depends on the severity of each case is different. In our case, my son wasn't diagnosed until he was 5.5 years old. So he had a lot of lung damage done. The doctors and pediatricians couldn't figure out what was wrong with him until finally we took him to University of Iowa, where he was diagnosed with the cystic fibrosis. Well, when we had our daughter, there was like a 1 in 4 chance that she would have cystic fibrosis. We took her down at 1 month old to have her tested, and she tested positive. So we started medications and treatments immediately on her. So that's why she has done as well as she's done, is just these continual treatments. And you have to be, very regular with these treatments. It's not skip a day or two and we'll pick it up the third day down the road. It's every day you do your treatments, or you're going to get, more severe lung infections, and you'll end up in the hospital.
How many people have CF in the States?
The current count, I think, is around 30,000 in the United States.
So it's
like one in every 30 people have some form of cystic fibrosis, whether it's being a carrier of the defective gene, or whether you have the cystic fibrosis itself. There's some individuals that have CF that you wouldn't know that they really have it, and they're up in their 40s, 50s. There's one individual down at Sioux Falls that does a golf tournament, and he's close to 70. So it's just, wow, a matter of how severe your case is. My daughter has a fairly moderate case, so she's constantly in a struggle with the treatments and the infections and so forth, but she's very adamant about her treatments, that she does them, and wherever she goes, and no matter where she's at, she continues them treatments, and they have to do that.
Okay. The event itself, again, is coming up October 4th and 5th. You started out with a banquet at the Eagles Club Friday night, and what happens there?
We open up the doors at 5:30, so there's kind of a happy hour and mingle amongst everybody and get together. You register, those that have pre-registered for the tournament will pick up their paperwork and their fish bag and their numbers that they'll take with them in the boat. Those that have not signed up yet, we still do sign up at the door, and they can register that night at the banquet, as long as we don't hit that 70 mark, which we've come close a couple of times, but we've never hit that 70. We had 68 one year, so we were close on that one. But they can register there at the door. They do not have to fish the tournament. If you want to come and participate, there are dinner tickets available for $30 at the door. There is a roast beef dinner that's served at the Eagles that night. So if they want to participate in in the banquet that night. We go through the rules meeting, and then after we're done with the rules, there's actually an auction. We have a live auctioneer, and there's homemade items and auction items that are auctioned off that night.
Okay. And then the next day, it's off to Stony Point and Cass Lake, and you take off what time?
We take off at 8 o'clock, and we finish up at 3 o'clock. They have a very unique harbor system there, that very protected area. It's nice that all the boats can gather in that harbor, and we release everybody one at a time, very organized out of there and very safe. So it's worked out very well.
Okay. And the what are the basic rules? How many fish can you take? And I'm assuming you follow the standard Minnesota slot?
Yeah, we do the Minnesota rules. So there's two fishermen in the boat, so you can have one walleye for each fisherman over 20 inches, or you can bring in six walleyes. That total is all you can bring in. So two of them can be over 20. If you can't get anything over 20, they all can be under that 20 range. But we also have a minimum size that we go with, and we go 15 inches or larger.
Okay. All right, so six total fish, and two can be over that 20-inch mark.
Correct.
What does it take to win that tournament? I mean, it's fall fishing. The walleyes are usually a little bit bigger than we see in some of the earlier tournaments. Must take a pretty decent bag to win that baby.
You know, over the years, we've seen weights that range anywhere from 15 pounds for those six fish. I think the biggest year that we had a 22-pound bag. And they had a couple of six. I think they had one six-pounder and they had one eight-pounder in there of the two over. Okay. But typically, the bag limit bags will be in that neighborhood of around 15 to 18 pounds for first place, and then it dribbles on down from there. We pay out the first 20 places, and then plus we make it interesting. We skip all the way up to 30th, and we pay $500 for 30th place. So even if you've caught one fish, that could put you right at that 30th spot and get you $500.
Okay, well, you're going to have to be a pretty good angler to pull this off, because Cass Lake has always been a low-light fishery, and it's even more so now, and so you're fishing in the middle of the day. You got to be pretty smart, and you got to be pretty diverse if you're going to find those big fish.
You know, and it depends on the weather.
Yeah.
A cloudy day or a windy day makes a difference. I mean, if you've got a sunshine, bright sunshine, calm day, then it's going to be pretty tough on them, but you get some wind and you get some clouds, and the guys seem to always find them.
All right. Now, you got a website that people can check out, or?
They can go to cysticfibrosiswalleyeclassic.com. That'll have pictures from last year's tournament and other tournaments from other years. You can get registered online, and all the information's on there also if you want to give us a call.
All right. What about, let's help out a listener who maybe has a newly diagnosed child, or maybe is newly diagnosed with cystic fibrosis themselves. Where did they go to get help?
Basically, the local medical clinics. Cystic fibrosis has become a lot more well-known than it had been 20 years ago. So a lot of the local clinics know about it, but as far as getting tested and so forth, they'll probably forward you on to either Fargo or University of Minnesota at Minneapolis.
Okay. And again, your tournament is coming up next weekend, October 4th and 5th, banquet at the Eagles Club Friday night. Tournament starting at 8 o'clock, Stony Point on Cass Lake on Saturday, and the weigh-in after that. Anything else we need to know, Steve, before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's it. Like I said, if they want to participate, they can come and buy a meal ticket and be with us on Friday night and meet my daughter and learn a little bit more about cystic fibrosis.
Steve Ballou, who heads up the Cystic Fibrosis Walleye Classic in its 18th year, coming up again October 4th and 5th with the banquet Friday night at the Eagles Club in Bemidji and the tournament on Cass Lake, headquartered at Stony Point, Saturday. Steve, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Coming up next, we talk hunting. For what? Pretty much everything. Matt Brewer joins us next.
More of The Great Outdoors with Kev Jackson next on Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors.
Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors is sponsored by DS Beverages and by Bonded Lock and Key. And don't forget to check us out on the web, kbunsportsradio.com. Click on Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. And we're on social media, so be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Well, you know, we always talk about deer hunting season. Deer hunting season's coming. Deer hunting season's coming. But there's so much more hunting to do before then. And one of the guys that I always lean on to get that information is Matt Brewer, because he hunts for everything. Welcome back to the show, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start out with bear hunting. That's definitely one that's been going for a while. How has the bear season been in Paul Bunyan country this year?
We only ran clients the first week, and they had 100% success on opportunity. We had one gal that was a first-time bear hunter, and she ended up not being quick enough on the draw on one bear, and then another bear, she was too a little bit too nervous to move to pull her gun up, and by the time she finally decided she was going to make a move, the bear busted her. And but we had a couple of really nice bears that came through, and like I said, everybody harvested except for the one person, and she had more than ample opportunity. But we had a 515 pounder and one that we figured was 280-ish. So we had some really good bears come through, and like I said, we wrapped it up pretty quick. And once bird hunting started, then, you know, kind of shifted gears to that. Obviously, early goose season and rough grouse and woodcock has kind of been where my mind is at. Haven't been out duck hunting yet, but there's so many things to do. You can only do one thing every day, and you got to pick and choose. But I'll hopefully do some duck hunting this weekend. So,
And I want to dive into all these other ones in a moment. But back to the bears. I mean, we saw early summer, spring. There was a lot of bears wandering around the area, and I guess they're always there, but they were a little more visible this year for us to see. I'm not surprised that you had a pretty good bear season. We got plenty of them here.
Yeah, it was a little worrisome because everything was kind of wet, and there was a lot of food, plenty of berries. The hazelnuts kind of came into their prime right around opener, so we were worried about, you know, bears eating more natural foods. You know, they're obviously going to opt for things like corn when it becomes ripe for the picking. They'll hit a cornfield way before they're going to hit a bait station. So, but everything worked out. I mean, I think hunter success rate around the state was pretty decent this year. I'll be interested to see how the numbers actually come out. But yeah, plenty of bears around. Even if you have a bear that is coming in and it shifts gears and, you know, starts to go for natural food, there's probably one behind it to take its place. there's just no shortage of them. So it's always pretty good.
I think we've talked about this before. I mean, a lot of people love getting their own bearskin rug and things like that. But you like the meat, right?
Yeah, bear meat is excellent. Actually, out of all the wild animals and all the store-bought breakfast sausages I've ever tried, bear breakfast sausage is by far my favorite. And then bear roasts are excellent. Tenderloins are obviously great out of any animal. And then we usually get some made into burger, and that's always good for sloppy joes or spaghetti or whatever. And I don't know, select cuts are always good. I mean, bear meat is, as long as it's taken care of and prepared correctly, it's fantastic.
What would you compare it to?
I would say it's similar to deer. I mean,
it's
not a whole lot different than deer, as long as, like I said, as long as you take care of the bear, get all that fat cut away and get all the silver skin and tallow pulled away, and you do that quickly, because the longer it sits on there, the longer it'll have to kind of fescue its way into the meat. So we get it taken care of right away, get the bear cool, get the hide off as fast as possible. All those things are important when it comes to the meat you're going to take off a bear.
So when you're actually preparing it, I mean, does it dry out like venison can do, or?
Yeah, I mean, it'll dry, especially, I mean, you're taking all the fat content away from it,
right,
to make for better meat. If you're going to do something like a burger, obviously you're going to cut it with something to add a little bit of fat to it. But it is prone to drying, so you got to do it kind of quick. And it's a little bit tricky with bear meat because They're finding a lot of cases of trichinosis. So you have to cook the meat thoroughly, or what we do is actually freeze our bear meat for about 4 to 6 months before we start utilizing it, and then we can cook it, you know, sear it pretty quick and have it medium rare or rare, and it's going to be good to go as long as, you know, it's frozen for long enough.
For most of your clients who are out hunting bear, I mean, is it a lot of repeat business? Is it a lot of new business? Is it people just the thrill of seeing a big animal like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly new clientele, but we do have people that, you know, they apply, and it takes 4 to 5 years to draw a tag in our zone, so, you know, we'll see them every 4 to 5 years, but they'll go home and they'll tell their friends, and then their friends are coming, and then their family members are coming, so we see a lot of the same faces over and over, but it's usually new people in the stands.
Okay. All right, you were mentioning all the hunting seasons that are going on now. What are they all again? I mean, it sounds like a lot of flying creatures available right now.
Well, you got pretty much everything. I mean, bear is open. Mm-hmm. Deer is open for archery.
Right.
And then, you know, the youth season, we got that coming up over MEA weekend. We're pretty excited for that. We just started scouting yesterday. So, and then you got grouse season, and woodcock is open. Ducks, geese, cranes. You know, all those things are open. So basically whatever you want to chase right now, Hungarian partridge, sharptail, they're all up and fair game right now. Dove season, I believe we're in the first crow season as well. So,
wow.
Pretty much everything is wide open. And then, you know, obviously we'll have deer season coming up in November, but that's my least favorite of all, of all the hunting seasons. You know, the most highly prized and most coveted in our state is the one I actually like the least. So,
what is your favorite?
I enjoy getting behind my dog, grouse and woodcock hunting, and then late season duck hunting when the diver ducks start to come and the big northern mallards start to show up on a lot of our lakes because we have so much rice. I like that the most. I like watching my dog work and like watching the kids be able to harvest, you know, so probably I'd have to say grouse and woodcock is probably my favorite thing.
I would think that that the cost of licenses might be a problem. I mean, that's a lot of licenses you need to buy.
Yeah, luckily, like for my kids, licenses don't really cost much at all. It's like a buck.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, so it doesn't cost a lot. For me, it gets a little spendy, but you know, not having to buy any meat or beef or poultry or anything, it makes up for it. I can shoot a lot of grouse and makes up for a heck of a lot of chicken purchase. So
what have you been hunting for lately?
Mostly grouse and woodcock, and a little bit of goose hunting mixed in here and there. But my son, he's really into woodcock hunting, so we've been getting out with the dog after school. And trying to harvest some woodcock, and got a few bonus grouse out of it, and hunted grouse opener pretty hard. We only hunted for about 5 hours, but we hunted pretty hard in those 5 hours, and the bird numbers aren't staggering. You know, you got the 10-year cycle with rough grouse, and it usually peaks on the nines, so this year should be the peak year. But we are seeing young birds, so I know there's a lot more birds out there. We're drowning in leaf cover. The leaves are falling, but it's really hard to see, and you flush a lot more stuff that you can't shoot at than you actually get flushing in front of you, and that gives you an open lane with a shot. So,
all of these things you mentioned, are they available here? Do we have to go a little ways to get to some of these populations?
No, pretty much everything is available here except for, you know, we don't really have sharptail or Hungarian partridge. We're in the deeper forest, so you got to get up in the northern prairie before you start to see some of that stuff. So once you get over, you know, like Boston and northwest of there, is where you're going to find sharptail, Hungarian partridge, prairie chickens, which I believe that season starts maybe this weekend. But that's a lottery draw, and lottery happened a long time ago, and I didn't get drawn this year. But
bummer.
But yeah, everything, all the prairie species are going to be found, you know, more western and northwestern Minnesota. So
talk to me about crow season. People actually hunt crow.
They do. I have only done it a couple times, and it's not something we we do on a regular basis. I'm no expert on it, and I don't really even know a whole lot about it. But yeah, a lot of people. There's a lot of people that love crow hunting. There's a very popular crow guide in Minnesota, and he goes by the Crow Man. And that guy knows everything there is to know about crows, and he gets hired a lot. It's a fun shoot. It's kind of like, if you've ever heard of someone going hunting pigeons at a farm that has a problem with pigeons, it's similar, but mm-hmm. crows are a lot smarter, and they're one of the toughest birds to get in close. So it's long-range shooting, and you got to be really, really careful and wary, and they've got great eyesight, and they're very leery birds, so.
Okay. Now, it's an old saying, eating crow, that's not a good thing. So I'm wondering, are these guys just trying to get rid of these crows, or are there people who actually dine on them?
I've never eaten one, but I know people do. Everything that I shot the couple times that I've gone, went with the person I was hunting with, and they were able to utilize them. However, I don't know if they... people find different ways to utilize meat. You can grind stuff for dog food. You can use it as fertilizer. so I don't know if they went to that or if people actually eat them. So
yeah, the only time I eat crow is when I make a Viking prediction.
yeah, that happens often.
100% crow eating there. Let me tell you. All right. So we're in the bird season now. Do you do any archery for deer?
I don't. I ended up selling my bow about 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
I used to be really big into it. I shot archery league, really enjoyed it, bear hunted with a bow, stuff like that. But the deeper I got into gun writing and, writing about ammunition and the amount of times I sat in the deer stand and watched a grouse walk by and then decided to get down and go get my shotgun and go grouse hunting instead, it just wasn't worth it for me to keep a bow anymore. And like I said, deer hunting isn't really that important to me. So I got rid of my bow and I'll stick to my gun.
Have you heard from any of the archery hunters out there how it's going?
Yeah, I mean, social media is obviously... you've got the world at your fingertips, and everything looks really successful. So it seems like, people are doing well. But no, I know quite a few people that do bow hunt, and I've seen, some pretty good videos and some nice deer harvested. And you just drive around this area and you know that there's plenty of deer. I can look out my window every evening or every morning and see plenty of deer, so I know there's no shortage of them. So if a guy's set up in the right spot, you're going to kill a deer.
Okay. I'm just curious, when you hunt for so many different things, how many different types of guns do you need to have?
Well, realistically, you only need a couple. I mean, okay. A shotgun, you can get pretty much everything done with that. You have a 12-gauge or a 20-gauge, you can shoot ducks and geese and crows, and you can shoot slugs for deer. I mean, you really realistically only need one or two guns. I mean, I like to predator hunt, and deer hunting I like using a rifle, so obviously I'm going to have a rifle, but it's not something that's a necessity. Mm-hmm. I could get away with probably just having one gun.
All right. Are you the one, do you do any of the musket hunting?
I used to muzzleloader hunt a lot, and when I do draw a bear tag, I always hunt them with a muzzleloader. So I really enjoy muzzleloader hunting, but, when deer hunting started to kind of fade for me, was when they came out with that all season deer tag, which allowed people to hunt, archery, rifle, and muzzleloader on one tag. And not saying there's anything wrong with that, but we kind of used to be able to muzzleloader hunt as a family, and we were like the only people out in the woods. You never saw anybody muzzleloader hunting. And when that tag came out, it became more popular, and now, you know, the efficiency of muzzleloaders has gotten so much higher that muzzleloader hunting is almost like rifle hunting now. So there's a lot more hunters in the woods, and kind of lost its appeal for me. And but I still, when I draw a bear tag, I have my muzzleloader with me.
Okay. How many of these various hunting seasons and these various critters do you actually guide for?
I mean, primarily for hunting, we are bears.
Okay.
But we, every year, will take on maybe one to two deer hunters, and then we do quite a few waterfowl trips every year, so we'll get people out after diver ducks. And then cranes have kind of become a high demand. We have a lot of people that want to shoot a crane that have never had a chance, and, you know, growing up in the crane zone in northwest Minnesota, I know where a lot of cranes are and have permission on a lot of fields that cranes use, so we do a few trips for those as well.
Yeah, is there much crane hunting here? I'm guessing not.
No, and we can't hunt them here.
Okay, there's a specific area you can hunt them in.
Yep, specific zone. It's a northwest crane zone, so it's only in northwest Minnesota.
Gotcha. Your old stomping grounds.
Yep.
Okay. You have such a knowledge, and you basically spend 365 days a year outdoors. I am somewhat curious as to why you even bother to own a house.
Your kids got to sleep somewhere.
I guess that's true. It's always fascinating to talk with you because you know so much stuff. What is it about the outdoors that has made you so enamored with it?
Well, I mean, it was instilled in me as a kid. I mean, if I wanted to hang out with my old man, we were going to be either on the water or in the woods. So, if I wanted to spend time with my dad on a weekend, I was going goose hunting or grouse hunting or bear baiting with him, or, you know. So, you know, I grew up in a huge hunting family, and don't get me wrong, there were times when I was younger where, like, hanging out with friends or partying or something like that kind of took precedent. And there were a few years I can think of in my youth where my dad was probably a little disappointed that I didn't hunt as much as I normally did. But I don't know. It makes me feel alive, and it helps you clear your head and gets you out of the hustle and bustle. I mean, if you sit in an office all day, there's nothing better than kicking all your work stuff off and throwing on a pair of ratty jeans and a good pair of boots and walking behind a bird dog. I mean, it relieves stress, and I don't know. It's just something I love, I guess.
Yeah. One of the other things you do a lot of is your mushroom hunter. How was that season this year?
It was and still is really good.
Okay.
It's getting really hard now with all the leaves falling, especially like today's wind. I'm watching leaves fall like crazy, but with all the leaf litter on the ground now, it's getting very hard to see the mushrooms because they're actually being covered up by all the leaf litter. But before the leaves started falling, it was fantastic. One of the best years I've ever seen for mushrooms. We had so much rain, and the temperatures were pretty mild. It kept everything kind of popping, and every time, you know, things would start to dry out a little bit, we'd get hit with more rain, and more mushrooms would pop. I think I've had more people call or text or send me messages of mushrooms. What is this? What is this? What is this? Than any year before, which is a good and bad thing. I mean, it means there's a lot of mushrooms out there, which is great, but I can't be answering 8 million questions a day on what mushroom a person sends me a picture of. So,
right.
But it was a really good season. I mean, and if you can get out now and you've got some areas that maybe are a little more protected and aren't seeing as much leaf litter, you can do really well. There's still a lot of stuff out and up.
Matt Brewer is involved in a lot of things outdoors. I know, Matt, you're doing a lot more, or not necessarily a lot more, but you've done a lot of writing lately. I know you do some photography. How can people take a look at that stuff?
The easiest way, we try to keep people updated on our Facebook page, so North Country Guide Service and Promotions on Facebook, or you can simply just go to our website, and that's northcountryguides.com, and we've got all of our social media links on there and all of our contact information as well. So,
all right. Matt Brewer from North Country Guide Service, who is Mr. Outdoors, and I just love chatting with him because he's got such a vast knowledge of everything outdoors. Matt, thanks for taking the time today, and good luck hunting and fishing for whatever it is you're going to hunt for or fish for next.
Sounds good. Thank you.